Session, the Honorable Ramona V. McNamara, Chief Judge, presiding.
All right, welcome back everyone. Please be seated. All right, so I know for the record we have counsel for the United States, both defense counsel and Mr. Assange, and probation officer. All right, so we took a break after the court accepted the defendant's guilty plea, and I did not unseal the plea agreement because we needed to get some corrections and amendments. Do we have a corrected or amended version?
Yes, Your Honor. I have in my hand, and I'll provide to the court, amended plea agreement page 2 that has been initialed by myself, Mr. Anderson, Mr. Pollack, and the defendant, as well as an amended page 17 of the agreement initialed by all four of us that makes the changes that we discussed earlier on the record, which I can provide to the court.
Yes, please send it to the clerk first, and then if you can approach the clerk here, and I'll review it once it's confirmed.
While I'm approaching, Your Honor, you also asked for a written copy of the stipulated facts.
Correct.
That I have created during the break. It has been reviewed by and signed by Mr. Pollack and myself. It says I'm approaching. I'll bring that
yes.
as well. And it was brought to my attention that when I was speaking, I may have misspoke as to when President Obama commuted Ms. Manning's sentence. I may have said June earlier. I meant to say January 17th, 2017. To the extent I misspoke, I apologize.
All right. So I'm glad that you're correcting it for the record. It's one of those lessons of mistakes are something that we can correct. All right. So for the record, I have the written stipulation of facts. Signed by both counsel for the government, Mr. McKenzie, and counsel for the defendant, Mr. Pollack, as well as the initials for pages 2 and 17 of the plea agreement. This would not disrupt any of the other pages.
That is correct. Pagination remains the same.
All right. And Mr. Pollack, you were able to confirm this information, that it would not affect the rest of the pages.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to tender this to the clerk, who's going to scan it and then enter it as an interdelineation from the original filing. Once the changes are made, then I'm ordering that the plea agreement will be unsealed as pursuant to the party's plea agreement. Okay? And also because I'll be using it open in the next phase, which is the sentencing portion. All right. In fact, are the parties prepared to go forward to the sentencing phase of these proceedings?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, on behalf of Mr. Assange.
All right. So for sentencing purposes, the court is required to first determine what the applicable guidelines range is. And so I will rely on because usually I use the PSR and guide to counsel for some discussion of how the probation officer was able to apply the charge and the facts to determine what the applicable guidelines range. Here I'm going to use the plea agreement, noting the offense of conviction at this time. Again, it is the one count of conspiracy as stated in the information. So looking at page 11 of the plea agreement, paragraph 11, the court needs to determine what the applicable base offense level is, and the parties have stipulated that section 2M3.3 applies, and this is based for the base offense level of 24. Again, it is for the conspiracy to obtain documents, writing, and notes connected with the national defense and willfully communicate documents relating to the national defense classified at the secret level. I commented earlier about the three levels of confidentiality. It is at the secret level. At the top secret level, the base offense level would change and would elevate. So I recognize that, and it would accept it as a base offense level. As to the acceptance of responsibility under 3E1.1A, as a result of this agreement and defendant having entering his guilty plea and having admitted his involvement in this offense and the related conduct as stated in the facts that were stipulated to in the plea agreement, it appears that defendant is going to be eligible and is in fact going to be accorded a two-level downward adjustment for his acceptance of responsibility. That means with the base offense level of 24 minus 2, that's 22. Mr. McKenzie and or Mr. Anderson, there is a provision that if the base offense level at this stage is above 16, under 3E1.1B, a defendant may, if appropriate, be accorded an additional one level. I notice the plea agreement does not have that provision. Is this something, and that's stipulated too?
Yes, it's stipulated to the two-level acceptance, and we will rely on the agreement as signed, Your Honor.
So you're not moving to award an additional one level that some defendants receive under 3E1.1B?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And referencing Application Note 3, and Mr. Pollack, you understand that this provision requires the government to make the motion?
That's correct, Your Honor. It is the government's sole discretion, and they have elected not to move to the third point, and we understand that and have accepted that in the plea agreement.
All right, then. So given the party's stipulation in the plea agreement for purposes of the acceptance of responsibility, even though they're under 3E1.1B, a defendant could be accorded an additional one level. That is not applicable in this case. And the court will therefore continue with the calculation. The next is as to whether or not the defendant qualifies for, well, this would result under the net result of 22. And by the way, for purposes of this calculation, the court is applying the 2023 version of the U.S. Sentencing Guidelines Manual. I think come November, I understand there may be some amendments and changes, so that's not here yet. And in regards to the calculation, given that the party stipulated to no other application and the court not aware of any basis, and again, this is a plea agreement that the court has accepted under 11C1C, that means the court would accept the party's agreement of how the application of the facts to the guidelines would proceed. But I'm articulating the grounds and the basis. So having calculated the resulting offense level at 22, the court then turns to defendant's criminal history. In this instance, the parties again agree that the defendant's criminal history is at category 1. Under the guidelines, that means defendant has a criminal history of either 0 or 1 to be able to qualify for that. And given that the parties further stipulate that defendant is not entitled to receive an adjustment pursuant to Section 4C1.1, that's another two-level down, which for an individual means months that could be shaved off. This is one that I'm trying to articulate how criminal history category 1 could still mean a denial of a 4C1.1. And as I just stated, it could mean that the parties understand, based on all the facts, that there could be a point of one. And then going back to the law regarding 11C1C, that the court, when bound by the parties' agreement, would actually have to accept, as stated, that a C1C agreement means that the court will agree that a specific sentence or sentencing range is appropriate disposition of the case, or that a particular provision of the sentencing guidelines or policy statement or sentencing factor does or does not apply. And so for that reason, I'm trying to reconcile how a criminal history category 1 could still result in a denial of 4C1.1. It's because I'm on a C1C basis where the parties stipulated to it. Otherwise, I would need to get into the background of the defendant's criminal history. And so, given the total offense level 22 and the criminal history category of 1 under the sentencing table, this results in a guideline range of 41 to 51 months imprisonment. And in this instance, the parties further stipulated in their plea agreement as to credit for time served, that the defendant, Mr. Assange, is entitled to credit for time served for the entire period he has been incarcerated, pending extradition at His Majesty's Prison, Belmarsh, the Category A Men's Prison in, not quite familiar, is it, Thamesmead, London, England, also known as Belmarsh. The parties further agree that the defendant entered Belmarsh on or about April 11, 2019, and at the time of this agreement has served approximately 62 months in prison. So for purposes of any credit for time served under the law, this is not one for the court to determine. In fact, it's actually, I normally refer to the Bureau of Prison, but the Bureau of Prison falls under the Attorney General. And I'm pretty sure Mr. McKenzie and Mr. Anderson also fall under the Attorney General. And so for purposes of granting a credit for time served for an imprisonment that occurred, I was looking into some case law on this, usually, but it's, say, a state court detention and the sentence has not been applied to any other punishment, then the federal court would apply that. This is one that was served outside of the country. I'm not aware of any prohibition against accepting it, but the understanding is that detention in Belmarsh was a direct result of the government, United States government, seeking the extradition. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I'm trying to make sure that the connection is clearly articulated, because I did read the bail report, and Mr. Assange is has made statements to reflect that basically it's been a 14-year ordeal. And so I need to figure out how the 14 years versus this 62 months apply as a matter of fact in law. So Mr. Pollack, you wish to, I guess, guide me on this distinction?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Assange was initially released on bail conditions in the United Kingdom pursuant to a material witness warrant that was unrelated to these offenses. He entered the Ecuadorian embassy and sought asylum from Ecuador to seek protection against the United States bringing a case such as the one that brings us here, and remained in the embassy under threat of arrest should he leave for about 7 years, and then has been in Belmarsh for more than 5 years. So the 14 years is a reference to the totality of the time that Mr. Assange has had restrictions on his liberty. The government is agreeing to give credit solely for the time that is at in Belmarsh. Of course, the C plea is to time served, so whether the court were to get there by giving credit or get there for other 3553 reasons that the court believes that's the correct result, either way, the C plea is to time served, but the government's view of it is that that's an appropriate sentence because the government believes it's appropriate to give credit for the time in Belmarsh, and that time does directly relate to this charge.
And just for clarification, that material witness warrant, was it not related to the co-conspirator alleged in this indictment or some other individual?
It was not. It was related to an investigation that did not result in any charges against anyone.
All right.
Your Honor, just to be clear, that the government does accept Mr. Pollack's representation that we don't start, the government does not consider any time before he was in Belmarsh as part of his sentence. It was only when he was arrested pursuant to our arrest warrant related to the facts of this case that should start for time served. Thank you.
Understood. Thank you, gentlemen, for that clarification. All right. Again, as in any case, the court is required to make the calculation under the guidelines. So having given the range as calculated at 41 to 51 months with credit for time served as agreed to by the parties, usually there's also an opportunity for an argument for departure. Neither party is presented any basis in the plea agreement. And even after the court determines what the applicable guidelines range is, the court must still consider the sentencing factors set forth at Section 3553A to be able to determine and impose a sentence that's sufficient but not greater than necessary as required for the purposes of the sentencing provisions at 3553A. And that is the reason, again, why I asked for the submission of the stipulation of facts, which I'm grateful that I have it in writing, basically indicating that for an aid of sentencing, that first on or about July 30, 2013, co-conspirator Chelsea Manning was found guilty of various offenses under the Uniform Code of Military Justice for conduct relating to the crime charged in the information. Second, that on or about August 21st, 2013, Manning was sentenced to serve 35 years imprisonment or in prison for those crimes. And third, that on or about January 17, 2017, President Barack Obama commuted all but 4 months of Manning's sentence. Manning ultimately served approximately 7 years in prison. I think this is where I got confused about commuted all but 4 months of the sentence, which was originally 35 years. So can you help me with the math?
It should remain like the remaining, all but 4 months of the remaining sentence that Chelsea Manning had served up to that time. So she was arrested.
She was sentenced to 35 years. Were all of that suspended or something that says it's lower? Or?
No. So she got credit for the time from when she was arrested. So she was arrested. She served time pending her trial, had the trial, was sentenced to 35 years. Then President Obama commuted all but 4 of the remaining months of her sentence to have it equate to approximately 7 years. And I'm sorry that it was inarticulate when I wrote that.
So I think you just said the magical words. Commute the sentence to equate to 7 years.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that's what the former president was intending to allow to be served of the 35-year sentence previously imposed.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Pollack, that was your understanding as well?
Yes, Your Honor. In other words, approximately 6 years and 8 months into the 35-year sentence, he commuted it to effectively a 7-year sentence, so she had a small amount of time that she had to serve, but in totality she served about 7 years.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. All right, so having done the calculation, and before we in fact proceed to any arguments of actual sentence and justification, and having accepted the defendant's guilty plea, and again, the plea agreement was ordered unsealed after it was modified. So, clerk, was that so done? Oh, okay. So the clerks are working on the insertion of those two new pages. And before proceeding to the actual arguments of sentencing, there were two matters that were previously was previously agreed to, which is the payment of the $100 special assessment fee. Is there confirmation of payment by the defendant?
Yes, Your Honor, it has been paid at the clerk's office, and I have a receipt from the clerk's office demonstrating the payment.
Okay. And I take it, Mr. McKenzie, you are satisfied that that was performed?
Yes, Your Honor, I just reviewed the receipt, but I would have accepted Mr. Pollack's statement.
Okay. And that was just trust but verify. All right, and for purposes of sentencing, in regards to any restitution, the government previously identified that there is no individual victim, so there won't be any restitution pursued, and that there's no forfeiture. So, at this time, having noted that the court is still governed by the 3553A factors, which requires me to consider the nature and circumstances of the offense, the history and characteristics of the defendant, the need to avoid unwarranted sentence disparities among similarly situated defendants, and the types of sentences available. And given all the facts, the court is relying on the facts stipulated to in the plea agreement and the stipulation of fact that was submitted today. With that said, pursuant to Rule 32I4 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, does the defense counsel wish to in fact speak and argue on behalf of the defendant for an application of an appropriate sentence in this matter? Mr. Pollack?
Your Honor, I think we'll stand on the record in this case. This is an unprecedented prosecution. I think the court is aware that Mr. Assange has already suffered significant consequences, including, as we discussed, his time in Belmarsh. And we believe, given the guidelines, given the lack of criminal history, given the nature of the conduct, that no further incarceration is warranted and that a sentence of time served is appropriate.
All right, thank you, Mr. Pollack. Let me then turn to the defendant. Mr. Assange, your attorney, Mr. Pollack, has made an argument on your behalf. However, you, as the defendant, have agreed to make a statement or present information to mitigate any sentence. Do you wish to make any statement to me at this time before we continue with sentencing?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Now, just for the record, I've already determined the calculation and focusing more of imprisonment, but for the record, just to be complete, there is also the possibility of a fine, and under the guidelines based on the offense level 22, the applicable fine range would be at $15,000 to $150,000, and that fine may be waived if the defendant establishes that he is unable to pay. In this matter, the court did receive a state of the bail report prepared by the probation officer, and there was barely any financial information. Officer David Atlevik, was there anything much in there?
Just what was on the report, Your Honor.
And your conclusion would be based on the information that the defendant is, in fact, unable to pay?
That is correct.
Okay.
And again, I based that decision or that recommendation on the information that I received from him.
From the defendant himself?
Yes.
And according to the plea agreement at paragraph 13B, the parties agreed not to recommend a fine. That is the government's position. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
And then for purposes of supervised release, it's not absolutely required in the circumstance of this case, but I've already indicated that it, if so imposed, it will be at least 1 year, but not more than 3 years. And the supervised release ordinarily follows any term of sentence, whether it's time served or anything. And according to the parties' plea agreement at paragraph 13C, the parties also recommend a period of no period of supervised release. if the court were to in fact pronounce sentence and note that there is no period of supervised release, then the defendant would be effectively able to be considered free from any of the charges in this court, and that there, based on the agreement, the subsequent dismissal will mean no further charges, given that the only other pending indictment against the defendant is the one in the Eastern District of Virginia. Is that correct, Mr. McKenzie?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. McKenzie, you have given the defense an opportunity, both through counsel and the defendant himself. Is there anything you wish to argue in support of an appropriate sentence in this matter?
Your Honor, the government relies on the statements and facts in our plea agreement and states that this is an appropriate sentence. That's time served, which is approximately 62 months. Thank you.
All right, so all right, having heard from both the defense and the government, at this time I'm going to invite Mr. Assange up here to the lectern with counsel. Mr. Assange, please step up to the lectern. And you can alight the lectern. That looks very small next to both gentlemen. That way the microphone will be...
This is only necessary for one of us, Your Honor.
Hopefully. That's the idea. So that means keep it going up, Mr. Miller. So, Mr. Assange, you stand before me to be sentenced in this criminal action. And as I stated, under the sentencing factors, after considering the guideline range here and the agreement, I would note the following. First, timing matters. I will say this. If this case were brought before me sometime near about 2012 or thereabouts, without the benefit of what I know now, which is that you've actually served a period of imprisonment that, based on what we've just discussed, is at least 5 years, and apparently one of the harshest facilities in the United Kingdom. Would it be fair to say it's possibly equivalent to the Bureau of Prisons Supermax? That is a significant fact. There's another significant fact. The government has indicated there is no personal victim here. That tells me, and I can surmise, that the dissemination of the information that occurred in this instance did not result in any known physical injury, and that these two facts are very relevant, because I would say that if this were still the unknown and close in time to when the dissemination started in April 2010, I would not be so inclined to accept this plea agreement presented to me. In fact, I would doubt any of the other United States District Court judges throughout the country would have done so either. But it's not the year 2012 or closer to the 2010 dissemination date. It's the year 2024. And I do have this information to consider, including the disposition of your co-conspirator in this case, Ms. Chelsea Manning. That is very relevant to me, as I cited under the 3553A factors about how the others are involved. And according to the stipulation that you entered into, for the record, for yourself and the government, because Ms. Manning did end up serving 7 years in imprisonment, and that's for her role when she was in fact an active member of the military, and a former president determined that 7 years in prison was sufficient. By accepting this plea agreement, it appears to me that the executive branch, the United States Attorney and the Department of Justice, have similarly made that decision, except it's on the front end. The court doesn't decide what to charge you with. It's the executive branch. The court is required to apply the facts and the law that's presented to it. I only have one count in front of me. We talked about the three different theories of getting to that same one conviction. I elaborate that, because these are all bases to consider reasonableness and sufficiency. So in comparison to Ms. Channing's actual prison time, it appears that your 6 to 2 months imprisonment is fair and reasonable and proportionate to Ms. Manning's actual prison time. And as I referenced in the bail report that I read, based on your statements to the probation officer and just described by your counsel, which does not appear to be disputed, that you've actually had a 14-year ordeal in various way or form, and that's certainly for that house arrest, and then the 7 years in the embassy. And looking at what transpired here, the direct credit is and should be the result of the extradition warrant that was sought by the United States, and your 5 years detention by the United Kingdom in response to that would be a fair and reasonable basis to give you that credit for time served, which is the 62 months. And so for these reasons, given the factual basis that accounts the whole saga of events that constitutes the basis for this very serious espionage charge against you, and given, as I stated, what is, in fact, the status of affairs here today in the year 2024, I am, in fact, sentencing you to a period of time served. And pursuant to your plea agreement with time served and credit for the time served, I am not imposing any period of supervised release. Given the fact that I am not facing you on supervised release, I obviously am accepting all the critical terms of your plea agreement for purposes of the punishment phase. I've gone over with you all the waivers that you are still bound to abide by. Assuming you, in fact, comply with all the terms and conditions and there is no breach of the plea agreement, it would end the case with me here on Saipan. I doubt that there will be any future breach, but you are so noticed that that is still a possibility. And pursuant to your plea agreement, there are some outstanding matters that will occur. The United States has already agreed that the dismissal of the only indictment pending in the United States against you in the Eastern District of Virginia will occur after this proceedings. And in return, you've also agreed to promptly remove yourself from the United States, including its territories and Commonwealth here. With this pronouncement, it appears that you will be able to walk out of this courtroom a free man. I do hope that there will, in fact, be some peace restored. I'll just note to you that this past week, the island has been celebrating 80 years of peace since the Battle of Saipan, which was a very bloody place between the Japanese and the Americans. And the people have been celebrating the fact that we've been celebrating peace here with the former enemy, and now there's some peace that you need to restore with yourself when you walk out and you pursue your life as a free man. In this instance, as I, having pronounced the sentence and imposed the sentence of time served with no period of supervised release, I need to still make sure you understand that under the terms of your plea agreement, you did waive certain rights of appeal. In fact, you expressly waived your right to appeal your conviction and sentence, as well as the right to file any post-conviction motion attacking your conviction, including a motion pursuant to Title 28, Section 2255. And as I stated previously, except for one based on ineffective assistance of counsel, based on information that you do not know now or could not have known at the time the sentencing occurred, even with the exercise of due diligence. Nevertheless, I am informing you that you can appeal your conviction if you believe that somehow your guilty plea that just occurred this morning was somehow unlawful or involuntary, or that if there was some other fundamental defect in the proceedings that was not waived by your guilty plea. Any notice of appeal must be filed within 14 days of the entry of judgment by this court, or within 14 days of a notice of appeal by the United States government. And if you so request it, even though you have counsel, the clerk here of the court can and will prepare a notice of appeal on your behalf. And if you cannot afford to pay the cost of an appeal or an appellate counsel, you have the right to apply for leave to proceed in forma pauperis, which means you can apply to have the court waive the filing fee. And on appeal, you can also apply for court-appointed counsel. Do you understand that, sir?
I do. Thank you.
And in this case, the other matter that the United States agreed to proceed with is a withdrawal of the pending request in the United Kingdom for the extradition of the defendant pursuant to paragraph 10B of the plea agreement. Mr. McKenzie, when and how does the United States intend to comply with provision of the plea agreement?
We will be withdrawing that extradition request forthwith to our barristers in the United Kingdom, Your Honor.
So that is noticed to you as to that portion of the affairs. Are there any other outstanding objections or matters to resolve, starting with the defense before me, Mr. Pollack?
Just for the sake of the complete record, the United States has also agreed that it will not charge Mr. Assange for any conduct that occurred prior to the to this proceeding.
Oh, yes. And that, I did see that in the plea agreement, and you're absolutely right. As I stated, I've accepted the plea agreement in its entirety. I just went through all the details, as you initially pointed out, or more so in the concern of the defendant's waiver. But I do see, apparently it's here, page 11, paragraph 10C. Yes, and I must say I was quite surprised, but I think it's a very generous statement that the United States agreed not to bring any additional charges against the defendant based upon conduct that occurred prior to the time of this plea agreement, unless the defendant breaches this plea agreement, which means basically everything for the past 14 years, other than what's been stated here. That's very broad. And this governs not only everyone here in this district, but every other federal district court. Because Mr. McKenzie is the one representing the Department of Justice, not Mr. Anderson. Mr. Anderson's jurisdiction, like mine, is limited just to this district. So good point, Mr. Pollack. Having so no other objections from the defense, Mr. McKenzie, any other matters or objections to note?
No, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
All right. With that, Mr. Assange, apparently it's an early happy birthday to you. I understand your birthday is next week.
That's correct, Your Honor.
It's probably the first one you celebrate outside a prison or any type of a limitation. So I hope you will start your new life in that positive note.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We stand adjourned.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.